The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Susan Dellinger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Oprah Magazine, April 2018, Volume 20, Number 4. This is the first of four installments of the April issue. On this month's cover, Oprah sits with her elbows propped up on a table and her hands clasped in front of her. She's wearing a crisp white shirt and polished gold rings and a bangle bracelet. Her hair is pulled into a ponytail and she's wearing tortoise-rimmed glasses. This month's headline is, What Would You Stand Up For? It's your time to rise and be the light you want to see. The big wide O for Oprah Magazine sits on an earthy coral ombre background. Looking behind the scenes of this month's cover, we have the headline sitting pretty. Our cover model has frolicked in waterfalls, climbed through canyons, and splashed at the beach. But this month, Oprah got serious. She wanted to do something that would be simple yet powerful, says O Creative Director Adam Glassman. Off went the heels, and on came the eyeglasses, one of her favorite accessories. Oprah then took a seat and posed for a classic portrait in a timeless white shirt. She said, I could get used to this. Slippers from now on, please. And the snapshot of her shows her in some really comfortable white hotel slippers below that white tabletop. Oprah in her comfort zone is the subtitle of this picture from the shoot. And below we have fashion editor Jenny Capitan and photographer Ruver Affendor buttoning up the details as they adjust Oprah's wardrobe. So how to get the clean and crisp look? As Glassman says, when in doubt, wear a white shirt. Adding a few gleaming pieces will make the wardrobe staple golden. So we have the classic white shirt from Chico's for $79. The special sateen fabric means no ironing required. There's a great big gold polished gold cuff from Jennifer Fisher Jewelry for $795. And from Pandora's new Shine collection, it's 18-karat gold plated sterling silver. We have this ring that looks like a fine honeycomb with a few pave diamonds scattered about. And the ring's probably almost a half of an inch wide. It's $180 at Pandora.net. Now, go for the bold. Whether you choose your eyewear to match your ensemble or vice versa, a la Gail King, these frames will have you looking smart. First off is a big pair of tortoise shell frames from C. CEyewear.com, $379. Next, in kind of a lavender, deep lavender tortoise shell look, rimmed glasses from Tory Burch at Lens Crafters for $210. Warby Parker has a pair of the brown and gold tortoise shell for $145. And finally, in a two-tone, kind of a deep brownish burgundy on the front with kind of a pastel red, if you will, deep coral side pieces from Peepers by Peeper Specs, $22 at peepers.com. We have another picture from this photo shoot of Oprah. This time, her face is facing the camera, her eyes are closed, and her fingers pointed at us, still in that crisp white shirt and the gold jewelry. Oprah says, It's not only noble to have strong beliefs, it's necessary. If you don't, some might argue that you're not paying attention. But it's even better and far more powerful to back up those beliefs with action. That requires taking initiative, which in turn requires guts. This month, we're continuing our year of big questions with one that feels especially timely. What are you willing to stand up for? Do your beliefs matter to you enough that you'd publicly defend them? How much would you put on the line to do so? You'll meet some courageous people who made their opinions known, including a certain late-night host who took quite a stand recently, and discover a few ways to speak up for yourself. No matter how you feel about it, I think we can all agree that marijuana is having a moment. Now that 9 states and Washington, D.C. have legalized it recreationally, it's finding its way into mainstream culture like never before. Check out our story on page 124 to see one fascinating, even delicious way two women are helping this along. I hope you'll enjoy what you read in the pages to come and be inspired to go out in the world and make some meaningful noise. Oprah. And because it's spring and because our weather has gotten really warm, let's look at this one iconic item in the Love That section, a fab find. And this is a Land's End Oxford cloth shirt in color blocking, and it's very springy in lots of pastel shades. So one side of the shirt is a pastel pink. The other side is a pale, pale pastel blue with a little bit darker pastel blue pocket, patch pocket. One sleeve is that darker pastel blue. The other sleeve is almost a pale orange sherbet. And then the tab down the front is that pale, pale orange sherbet. Let's hear what Adam says about this. Buttoned up. Even a wardrobe workhorse deserves a little fun. A palette of soft pastels gives this timeless Land's End Oxford a pretty vibe, but it can still get down to business. It's versatile enough to wear tucked in or loose, pair with jeans or khakis, and make the swift shift from the office to off-duty. Basic with some bang, it can also stand in as a bathing suit cover-up, thanks to extra booty clearing length. $60 at landsend.com. And now we'll take a look at Adam's home style sheet in Love That. And this is homage to spring, flowers, and gardening. At the top of the page, we have a gardening hat. Hat check, it says. Straw hat, $76. Lackofcolor.com. And it has a beige and white gingham band around it. Below that, in the middle of the page, we have this trumpet vase, which looks like a bouquet of daisies, coming up daisies. Maria Flor by Bordallo Pinheiro Pitcher, $95 at VistaAllegre.com. And, well, I thought it was a vase, and I think you could use it as a vase. The bottom two-thirds looks like green stems, and then where it flares out at the top, it looks like pressed white daisies with big yellow centers. Next, we have an oval pad, and this is a kneeler. It comes from Amazon.com. It's $43, and the little subtitle here is On Bended Knee. So this is one of those little foamy cushioning things that you use to spare your knees when you're on your knees gardening. It's in robin's egg blue with pictures of birds and flowers, red flowers, green leaves, and some brown and blue birds on it. Next, we have a gathering basket, $45 from WilliamSonoma.com. It has a wooden panel on each end, and the center is sort of a U-shape of wire and then a wooden handle. They show it here full of tomatoes that have just been picked from the garden. For $99, we have a garden hose in robin's egg blue, and you can get this at GardenGlory.com. Some Crocs. Clogs for $40. They are black with coral and white flowers on them. Go to Crocs.com. Now, here's a colander in white enamel with green lettuce leaf graphic designs on it. It comes molded to its own little stand. It's $47 at GoldenRabbit.com. We have some hand tools for your digging and clipping in the garden. And these are white with a graphic Morning Glory design all over them. So the blade of the spade, the handles, the little three-pronged digger have this sort of deep coral or blue Morning Glory with, of course, the green stems and leaves. And then the clippers also have that beautiful floral pattern. This gardening tool set is $45 from mckenzie-childs.com. Then digging, it's our next item, Urban Kid Grow Kit for $40. There's a canvas bag and a packet of zinnia seeds. Go to urban-agriculture.net. And to top it all off, we have a basket. Handbag, straw handbag, $398 from Kate Spade. And it's this beautiful woven straw with the handle in the center and flaps on each side. The handle is covered in a kind of light coral leather, and the flaps are in this light coral leather. There are brass clasps, and then just for a little bit of extra jazz on the side, there are some strawberries made of fabric dangling on a chain. So spring is in the air, and these fun outdoorsy finds are ripe for your picking. Let's dip over to the reading room now and look at 10 titles to pick up now. The first one is Self Portrait by Boy by Rachel Lyon. In Lyon's haunting debut novel, after a struggling Brooklyn photographer captures a child's death with her camera, she faces a moral dilemma. Will she do the right thing or make a pact with the devil? The second title, You Can Stop Humming Now, A Doctor's Stories of Life, Death, and In-Between, by Daniela Lamas, M.D. In the early years of her practice, Lamas learns the hard way that medicine requires as much heart as science. Her empathetic, beautifully crafted accounts from inside the ICU recall the work of Atul Gawande. Our third title is Trenton Makes by Tadzio Kolb. In post-World War II New Jersey, an abused Rosie the Riveter wife doesn't just hit back at her husband. She kills him, disposes of his body, and assumes his identity in this transgressive, barbed wire sharp debut novel. The fourth title is Quiet Girl in a Noisy World by Debbie Tongue. For everyone who'd opt for solo couch time over a party any day, Tongue's sweetly comic graphic memoir illuminating the pains and perks of being socially awkward is Manna from Hermit Heaven. The fifth title is Speak No Evil by Uzodema Iweala. Two seniors at a Tony private school in Washington, D.C., one a Harvard-bound Nigerian immigrant, the other a savvy white girl, find their friendship tested when the boy's homophobic father discovers his son is gay. A stirring, textured novel from the author of Beasts of No Nation. And our sixth title of 10 titles to pick up now is The House of Broken Angels, by Luis Alberto Urrea. Centered around a dying man's final birthday party and inspired by the death of the author's brother, this humane and often laugh-out-loud hilarious novel is a first-generation family saga interweaving myth, mourning, revelry, and the desire for immortality. The seventh title, Awayland, Stories by Ramona Ossabel. Ossabel, the author of two previous collections and two novels, imbues every one of her offbeat yarns, whether about a mayor declaring an official day of lovemaking or a cyclops looking for hookups on a dating site, with weirdness and warmth. The eighth title is Stray City by Chelsea Johnson. This lively first novel, Portlandia on the Page, features a lesbian reeling from a breakup who begins a befuddling affair with a man. Things don't get any easier when she realizes she's pregnant. The ninth title, The Merry Spinster, by Mallory Ortberg. The texts from Jane Eyre, author and Slate's Dear Prudence Advice columnist, delivers a wicked reimagining of children's tales, including a blood-chilling take on the Velveteen Rabbit, guaranteed not to lull you to sleep. And our tenth and final of the titles to pick up now is A Dog Runs Through It, Poems by Linda Pastan. The National Book Award finalist captures the irreplaceable love of a woman for her canine in the wistful, witty collection. About a favorite Ridgeback, she writes, quote, "For company, only my old dog, and dim and silent as a fog, my old ghosts," end of quote. Let's move now to this month's features. And I always love sharing with you the creative way the folks at Oprah Magazine have given us the Oprah O. And this month, we have a woman holding an umbrella, and she's wearing a trench coat and some wellies, some rain boots that are kind of that robin's egg blue. There's a robin's egg blue background to the page. Now, what dominates the page is a big red umbrella, which she's holding over her shoulder so that we're seeing the whole top of the umbrella. And what do we have that takes up almost the whole red umbrella? The big Oprah O in robin's egg blue. April 2018, when the sky turns gray and the rain pours down and nothing is as it should be, do you take cover or get out there and do what needs doing? This month, we're saluting folks who speak up for what's right, come hell or high water, including accidental healthcare advocate Jimmy Kimmel. And let's start out with Oprah's interview of Jimmy. A stand-up guy is the name of this article. Oprah speaks to joke teller turned truth teller Jimmy Kimmel about the monologue that changed everything. He probably wouldn't have been anyone's first pick for ardent activist Jimmy Kimmel, with the, quote, "I ate my kids' Halloween candy," end of quote bit, co-host of the old raunch fest, The Man Show. But after taking a bold stance on the healthcare debate last May, candidly discussing it in a passionate, reasoned, tear-filled monologue on his long-running talk show, Jimmy Kimmel Live, he placed himself at the center of a hot-button issue in front of more than 2 million viewers. Did his words contribute to the defeat of a bill repealing the Affordable Care Act just 3 months later? We can't say for sure. What we do know is that Kimmel shares an important quality with his infant son. He's a fighter. And here's Oprah's phone conversation. We have a picture of Oprah sitting with this sort of, she's sitting at a desk on the phone with a bookcase behind her and one leg propped up on the desk in front of her. And she's wearing this sort of that English rose, that sort of beigey rose pants and little ankle boots. She's wearing a satiny blouse with a metallic gold sweater over it. And her hair is pulled back in a ponytail and she's got on some big glasses that harken back to the 1960s in style. And then over on the other page, we have a picture of Jimmy Kimmel sitting in a plaid shirt at a phone, holding a phone in what looks to be an office. Oprah, "Hi, Jimmy. Thanks for doing this." Jimmy Kimmel, "Of course. Are you kidding me? I've been sitting and staring at my phone for like 22 minutes. Oprah, "Our big question for this issue of O is, what are you willing to stand up for? I told my team the best person to talk about that is Jimmy Kimmel, because it seems like you've uncovered a different layer of yourself. 2017 was a watershed year for you. First, you hosted one of the most fraught Oscar ceremonies we've seen in a while, where the wrong Best Picture winner was announced and did a fantastic job. You made headlines, speaking out on gun control. You turned 50, and in a very emotional speech on your show, you shared that your son, Billy, has a rare congenital heart defect and was born fighting for his life. He had surgery at 3 days old. That experience was a catalyst that brought you very publicly into the raging health care debate that's been going on in this country. Jimmy, absolutely. I was at Children's Hospital Los Angeles, and I saw how the nurses and doctors treat the patients and their parents, the compassion they have, and that low-income families get just as good treatment as everyone else. It just so happened that at that very time, health care for children was being threatened by our government. I don't know if I believe in signs, but in this case, it was hard to see it any other way. I knew when I went back on the air after my son's surgery, there would be a lot of attention because I'd been away for a week. I wanted to remind America that whatever we are, Republican, Democrat, or otherwise, everyone cares about their friends and coworkers' children and their well-being. That crosses party lines. Oprah. We could all tell it was coming from the soul and heart of you. It was vulnerable and authentic. Had you planned what you were going to say, or did you just start talking and let it flow? Jimmy. I had some of it planned. I wanted to make sure I mentioned all the doctors and had the information correct, so I did some research beforehand. I wasn't intending to cry, though I knew I probably would. You know, some things are so painful and so difficult to write that you wait until the last minute. I didn't really know what I was going to say until right before the show. Oprah, had you already done a lot of crying in the hospital? Jimmy, there wasn't a lot of crying, partly because I felt like it would upset other members of my family if I got upset. Oprah, they're looking to you for signals. Jimmy, well, my wife and I looked to each other. There were secrets we kept from each other that we revealed only after the second surgery. The biggest one was that, I think subconsciously, we didn't want to get too close to the baby because we didn't know what was going to happen. Oprah, wow. Jimmy, I don't know if that's right or wrong or common or uncommon, but when I told her I was feeling that way, she said, oh, I'm so happy you said that, because I was feeling that way too, and I didn't want to express it. Oprah, yeah, it feels very natural to cover your heart. When I experience a lot of disruption in my own life, I always ask, what is this here to teach me? What did this year teach you? Jimmy, it taught me what's really important. It taught me that I have a much more powerful platform than I realized, and it taught me that in times like these, we're supposed to care for each other. The basic teachings of Jesus say that you must take care of your neighbor. I hope that people who call themselves Christians remember that every day. Oprah, was it scary at first to get so personal when talking about your son? Jimmy, I don't know if it was scary, but it was uncomfortable, and it's not something I looked forward to. I definitely felt a sense of relief when it was over, and according to polls I've seen, it has cost me commercially. That's not ideal, but I wouldn't change anything I said. Oprah, has this past year made you a more spiritually connected person? Jimmy, I've always been religious. I was raised Catholic, and religion has always been a part of my life. I've been praying a lot more, that's for sure. So I guess my answer is yes. Oprah, you've performed a monologue almost every night for 15 years, but it feels like you've stepped into a more meaningful space. Have you had a reckoning between humor and substance? Jimmy, I think so. I know my job is, for the most part, to entertain people and make them laugh. That said, if I can be selfish every once in a while and talk about something serious that's important to me, then I do want to take that opportunity. But I don't want to abuse my position. I pick my battles. 90% of the time, I'll joke around. But some of the jokes, I hope, make people think. Oprah, I remember your monologue the night after the massacre in Las Vegas, your hometown. You were very emotional there, too. Jimmy. It's always horrible when something like that happens, no matter where. But human nature dictates that the closer it is to you, the more you feel it, and I definitely felt it. I have to say, it's very frustrating to me that all this time later, we still haven't done anything significant about gun control. People really dig in. They think you're going to come into their homes and take their guns away. I'm not suggesting that. I just think we have enough pain in the world, enough things we can't manage, accidents and diseases and natural disasters. But for guns, we have the cure, and we just choose not to use it. The idea that you can be on the no-fly list and still own a gun, that just defies common sense. Oprah. Do you worry about the people who don't agree with your political views? National Review said you were, quote, misleading Americans and clouding the debate, end of quote, over gun violence. What do you say to the critics? Jimmy. I hope they never wind up in the situation the people in Las Vegas were in or that I was in. But I do think that if they ever find themselves there, their opinion would change. Oprah. You know, I believe that so many people are craving meaning, and the reason why what you said resonated so deeply is that people felt the realness. What do you think the world is craving right now? Jimmy, I think we need a leader who has our best interests in mind. Gun control and health care are important issues, and there are so many others, like climate change, which is probably the biggest of them all. Oprah. Until New York and Florida are underwater, people will still be denying climate change. What does it mean to you to have conviction? Jimmy, it's something I've had since I was a kid, and not necessarily about important things. Like if I see someone put ketchup on a hot dog, I'm sorry, Oprah, I know in Chicago that's very common, but I have great conviction that that is unacceptable. Oprah, it shouldn't happen. Jimmy, it is wrong. I have conviction about a lot of stupid things, but occasionally something that matters pops in there too. Oprah, were you born that way, or did someone model that for you? Jimmy, my parents for sure. The best way I can illustrate who my parents are is to say they're the people who will fold up all the chairs at the end of the event, then be at the sink washing dishes. That's something you see, and whether you realize it consciously or not, it becomes a part of you. Oprah, on which truths would you stake your own life? Jimmy, you mean besides the ketchup on hot dogs thing? Maybe it's trite, but I think the golden rule is the one, do unto others. I think if we all did our best to follow that one, we'd have no problems at all. Oprah, I know a daily talk show takes every bit of your focus and energy. How do you find peace? Jimmy, I have a couple of hours in the morning with the kids, then maybe an hour and a half with them at night before bedtime. And if I can't go fishing, I go online and look at pictures of rivers and of people fishing. It just makes me feel better. Oprah, do you think there's a purpose to celebrity? And if so, what is it? Jimmy, this might be overly simple, but maybe it's to bring a little bit of happiness into people's daily lives, and then to use your power, if you want to call it that, to support individuals and organizations who need and deserve it. I've been very, very lucky financially and otherwise, and it's important to spread that around. My Uncle Frank never really had any money, but he always tipped well. He'd say, spread it around, spread it around. Oprah, how is your baby Billy doing? Jimmy, he's great. He went to the cardiologist today, and he'll have another surgery when he's around 6 or 7 years old. But in the meantime, he's doing great. Oprah, that's fantastic. What is your prayer for him and your other three children? Jimmy, I pray that above everything else, successful, smart, all of those things we want our children to be, that they're good people. I'm probably overly focused right now on what's happening politically. I'm a little bit obsessed. I can't help it. And I hope my kids are some of the citizens who, in whatever way they can, help make good things happen. Jimmy Kimmel Live celebrated its 15th anniversary this year. To hear Oprah and Jimmy's full chat, download Oprah's Super Soul Conversations podcast. So let's go back to the beginning of this article. We jumped ahead to the end of it to read the interview with Jimmy Kimmel. What are you willing to stand up for? The cultural tumult of the past couple of years has awoken something in many of us. Newly gutsy advocates have gone up against forces much bigger than themselves and come out with even more conviction. Is it easy? Usually not. Is it risky? Generally so. But some things in life are well worth the fight. When you find it, you know it. The issue that sets your brain aflame, the one you're incapable of shutting up about, consequences be damned. And those consequences are often all too real. Discord, danger, or at least some very difficult conversations. Maybe you haven't happened upon your burning issue yet. Or maybe you're facing 1,000 other everyday battles, feeling too overloaded to make an impact. But there are countless ways to get loud about the topics you care about, or to stretch yourself beyond your comfort zone to make your message heard. Here's hoping no one's unlucky enough to get in your way. And we have lots of profiles and contributions from and about different people. And scattered throughout these pages, we have a brief paragraph about different transformative leaders. Follow the leaders. Need some motivation for transforming the whole dang world? Look no further than these uncompromising elected officials. The first one is Barbara Mikulski. After 40 years in office, the longest-serving woman in Congress retired in January 2017. She told CNN, quote, "When I came to the Senate, the senators were Tom, Dick, and Harry. Now they're Barb, Tammy, and Diane, and Heidi." End of quote. On her decision not to run for re-election, she said she wondered, quote, "Do I spend my time raising money, or do I spend my time raising hell?" End of quote. We have a profile now of Zoe Quinn, and it's called Foul Play. Targeted for abuse online, Zoe Quinn set out to bring justice and civility to the wild, wild web. Zoe Quinn can pinpoint the moment she realized she'd been devoting her life to ending online harassment. It was October 2014, and for months, the video game developer had endured threats from a group of largely anonymous internet trolls at the center of a controversy known as Gamergate. Quinn's interactive game, Depression Quest, about living with mental illness, had enraged a subset of the gamer population by defying their definition of what a, quote, real game should be. When her ex-boyfriend alleged that she'd slept with a journalist for a positive review, never mind the fact that no such review was ever printed, conspiracy theories gave way to harrowing abuse. Quinn was doxxed. Her address, phone number, and other personal info made public online, and suddenly she was receiving letters smeared with bodily fluids and threatening phone calls at all hours of the day and night. Terrified, Quinn abandoned her apartment and erased much of her presence on the internet, a place she'd long considered a second home. And then came the day that changed everything, when she discovered that someone had hired a man to sift through her garbage. It hit her, quote, "This will always be part of my identity," end of quote. Hard as that was to swallow, the realization also revealed a new path. Quinn thought, quote, "If my old life is gone, maybe I can make lemonade out of the lemon trees that crashed onto the hood of my car and broke my windshield," end of quote. Since then, Quinn has spoken at the United Nations and co-founded Crash Override Network, a grassroots organization that works to stop online abuse. Nearly one in five Americans has experienced physical threats, stalking, or sexual harassment online, with women targeted because of gender twice as often as men. Quinn's goal is to, quote, "empower people to take care of each other so that the empathy issue," end of quote, that is, its absence online, will be dealt with. She says, quote, "Community isn't just about finding people with common interests. It's about how you treat others. I'm optimistic that someday we'll think more critically about how we behave online. Ultimately, the internet isn't tubes and wires. It's a Soylent Green thing. It's people. End of quote. And now we have another one of our political leaders cutting off Senator Elizabeth Warren's February 2017 speech on the Senate floor. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said she was warned to stop talking. He went on to say, quote, "Nevertheless, she persisted," end of quote. Retailers rushed to plaster the new feminist fave slogan on everything from bumper stickers to baby onesies. And here's another political leader. Reflecting on the role of Congress in April 2017, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand told a reporter, quote, "We're here to help people, and if we're not helping people, we should go the F home," end of quote. And our next profile is of Silas Music. "Just the Way You Are" is the title. After enduring conversion therapy, Silas Music converted himself into a gender justice crusader. Sarah Music spent the first 18 years of her life as the dutiful, overachieving daughter of a Southern Baptist pastor in small-town Virginia. Then she went to college and fell in love with another woman. After graduating, she spent 6 intensive months at Colorado's Focus on the Family Institute, trying to pray away her dirty thoughts about women. It didn't work. 4 years later, guilt and shame led her to try to hang herself, then swallow handfuls of pills washed down with tequila. Following much soul-searching, today, Sarah is Silas, proudly and publicly chronicling his transition from female to male. An activist against conversion therapy for people under 18, the happily married father of two has dedicated himself to personal truth and authenticity, inspiring others to own their journey by remaining radically open about his. In Music's words, quote, "After my suicide attempt, I started blogging really raw, honest, hard stuff about religion, my sexuality, and the fallout with my parents over how different I was from the person they expected me to be. Some of my friends said, 'This is not appropriate,' and yeah, I could have kept quiet, but what would I have gained? Every time I share honestly and vulnerably, almost without fail, someone else reaches out with their own story. And for everyone I do hear from, how many more are out there that I don't? That's worth the pushback. Having to be so secretive in college for 2 years while I was in a relationship was one of the hardest, darkest stretches because everything I experienced, I hid. And maybe I've overcorrected and then just now this gushing spillover. I do overshare as a general practice, but feeling so not authentic for so long took the meaning and purpose out of life. Educating people is so important. Like even, what the hell is happening to my body as I transition? I'm happy to answer questions. I'm definitely willing to be the story. Being trans is becoming more and more public, and in most cases, I don't feel tokenized. This is likely just a phase of a society catching up to an idea. It won't be my job to carry this banner my entire life." End of quote. If you see something, quack something. This is our next article. Safer, more equitable streets are just a weird animal noise away. A man calls, "Hey, sweet cheeks," at a woman walking down a city street. It's so routine that it almost feels like an acceptable urban nuisance, but it's not harmless. That everyday catcall is public sexual harassment, and it has real emotional consequences. Some anti-street harassment advocates call it a human rights violation, and a member of French President Emmanuel Macron's cabinet has even proposed that it be made a punishable offense. Jessica Raven, executive director of the Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit Collective Action for Safe Spaces, CAS, says we shouldn't just accept street harassment as an unpleasant fact of life. Quote, "It's everyone's responsibility to speak out," end of quote. CAS uses public education, workshops, community outreach, and advocacy to create a safer, more decent city, and its toolkit of intervention techniques, partly based on the widely studied Green Dot Bystander Training Program, may help you stop a harasser in his tracks. And here are three tips. Call him out like a crossing guard. Command stop with an outstretched arm and open palm. Taking charge can stun and disempower a harasser who anticipated a submissive response. Create a distraction. If you're witnessing harassment, drop your keys on the ground and interrupt to ask the target, "Are these yours?" Or answer an abnormal action with a discombobulatingly abnormal response. Liberate your inner actress and make a strange loud noise, quack like a duck, or sing at the top of your lungs. Those simple moves can derail and de-escalate the harassment so you can make an exit. And finally, lend an ear. If the incident happens too fast for you to respond, or if it feels unsafe to intervene, support the targeted person by approaching them afterward and telling them, "I saw what happened and it wasn't okay. Is there anything I can do to help?" Now we have another one of our political leaders, and this is Senator Lisa Murkowski. Asked by a reporter whether she was worried that her decision to vote against repealing the Affordable Care Act would affect her re-election, Senator Lisa Murkowski said in July 2017, quote, "We're here to represent the people who sent us here. Every day shouldn't be about winning elections. How about just doing a little bit of governing around here? That's what I'm here for." End of quote. And here's another quote from Brian Stevenson, founder and executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative and co-author of the just-released A Perilous Path. "Standing up for what's right can be uncomfortable and inconvenient. Biologically, psychologically, human beings like comfort. You can opt for comfort over discomfort for a really long time, but eventually you get pushed to the point where it becomes uncomfortable to stay silent, to keep swallowing acts of oppression or injury. Then you're required, you're compelled to act. Hope is the thing that gets you to stand up when other people tell you to sit down. I am persuaded that hope is our superpower. It's what allows us to overcome, to endure, then achieve." Our next profile is of Canadian politician Selena Cesar-Chavanas, who fought hair shaming with one exhilarating speech and some very dope braids. Selena Cesar-Chavanas has long had an activist spirit. In high school, during the Rodney King riots, she got permission to protest on school grounds. She says, quote, "I stood by the road with signs like, 'Honk for Justice,'" end of quote. She studied politics while getting her MBA and often wondered what it would be like to run for office herself. At age 40, after registering as a liberal, Cesar-Chavanas, then managing her own consulting company, received an email from her new party that spurred her to find out. She says, quote, "It said something like, 'Do you know a strong woman who can put forward ideas to help shape the future of Canada?' I thought, 'Yeah, me. I'm your girl.' It was so serendipitous. It was a calling." End of quote. Elected to Parliament representing the district of Whitby in 2015, Cesar-Chavanas relished having a role that gave her access to the public's ear. Last year, she knew precisely which issue she wanted to draw attention to. She says, quote, "I read about a black girl being removed from class in Toronto because her hair was too poofy, and women disciplined at work because their braids weren't, quote, appropriate for the office. Then I read a story about two black girls in Massachusetts who were threatened with suspension because of their braids. I found it also asinine. It just blew my mind. Friends were sharing similar stories, and I kept thinking, 'This is nuts. I couldn't just stay silent.'" End of quote. Cesar-Chavanas crafted a statement, not worrying about blowback. Quote, "I knew I'd earned my colleagues' respect. I know I'm good at what I do, end of quote. On September 20th, 2017, she gave a barn-burning speech to Parliament about style-based discrimination and had her own hair braided for the occasion. A video of the speech went viral and inspired thousands of admiring comments, emails, likes, and heart emojis from China to Kenya and beyond. She says, quote, "The email that most surprised me was from a self-described bald white 72-year-old man who shared the video with all the females in his family. He probably lived a very different life from mine, but he was touched. That tickled me," end of quote. Turns out, Sejar Chavannes was changed by the speech, too. She says, quote, "I'd had my hair straightened for about 25 years, but since then, I keep it natural. It's the rebirth of Selena," end of quote. And our next profile is of author Phalia Hassan, who wields a mighty pen. And this is entitled Lines in the Sand. Phalia Hassan has never not known war. The 50-year-old Iraqi was born in 1967 amid the ongoing Iraqi-Kurdish conflict. The Iran-Iraq War hit her homeland while she was in middle school in 1980. Officials decided they'd close her school, quote, temporarily, until the war finally ended, which didn't happen until 8 years later. Her aunt had 6 sons go into combat. None came home alive. Hassan recalls, quote, "We would never say, now we'll rest. The war is every day, every moment," end of quote. To help deal with the horrors she witnessed, men dying at her feet as she searched for her father along a battle's front line, starving street dogs eating dead bodies to survive, Hassan turned to her writing, creating poems about love, family, womanhood, hope, and war. In 1991, Hassan became the first woman in her home city of Najaf to publish a book of poetry titled Because I Am a Girl. It was incendiary, and not only because of her brutal honesty about life in wartime, the image on the front was a woman's uncovered head. Hassan became a sensation, the Maya Angelou of Iraq, going on to publish 15 more books of poetry, several plays, 2 novels, and dozens of short stories. Her work has been translated into 14 languages. But in 2011, her accomplishments brought her a more terrifying kind of recognition. Her name landed on a militant group's death list. The list's publication essentially granted sympathizers permission to murder her. Hassan says, quote, "In Iraq, being a thinker is dangerous," end of quote. She fled to Turkey with her 2 youngest children and spent months dealing with the UN to get resettlement paperwork. In August 2012, they moved into a modest apartment in New Jersey. There, Hassan taught herself English online and by watching Kevin Hart and Tyler Perry movies, and she has been writing prolifically in her adopted language ever since. Now her pen is a weapon in a more personal battle. She says, quote, "I'm fighting against prejudice and misunderstanding. In Iraq, it is hard to be a woman who writes. In America, it is hard to be a woman in a hijab. But if I write and teach and raise myself and other women, maybe equality and acceptance will come. Maybe there will be peace," end of quote. And in a sidebar, we have an article called For the Record. When you observe outright discrimination or abuses of power, don't just stand there, hit record. You've seen the gut-wrenching videos online. A man shot in his car on the way home from a grocery store. Concert goers running from bullets. A phone has become a viable tool for recording violence and injustice. And the New York City-based organization Witness provides training and resources on the right and wrong ways to document it. Jackie Zamuto, Witness's program manager, says, quote, "This new technological landscape has democratized people's ability to get the story out. Recording human rights abuses on video has the power to counter misleading narratives, spark investigations, and mobilize people. Video can even be used as evidence in court to secure justice for victims, end of quote. That's what's happened in the case of Walter Scott, killed by a police officer who'd stopped him for a traffic violation. The officer was sentenced to 20 years in prison, thanks in large part to an amateur phone video of Scott's death. And in some cases, Zamudo says, taking out a camera can actually prevent a bad situation. Quote, it's not always about capturing someone in the act. The camera can be a deterrent. If people know they're being watched, they may stay on their best behavior. End of quote. Just don't raise your lens before reading these guidelines on how to be a better bystander. And there are several of them here. Before you film, assess the risks. Could filming the incident put others in danger by exposing the victim's identity, home address, or sensitive personal information, or put you in harm's way? Show the details. Document license plates, badge numbers, threatening symbols or signs, weapons, property damage, violent behavior, injuries, etc. Focus on telling a story, says Zamudo. Quote, think, if I weren't here, what would I need to see to make sense of what's happening? End of quote. Provide narration. If investigators eventually see the video, they'll need to hear what's going on, so narrate, but stay calm and state only factual details, like a description of the incident and what led up to it. And now, before you share, pause. Waiting to release a video can be a good strategic decision, says Zamudo. Quote, if the police come out with an official report that misrepresents what happened, releasing video that helps contradict it can prompt investigations, end of quote. Once the video is online, you lose control of how and where it's used. And if you put the video on your personal Facebook page or YouTube channel, you might be the target of a media onslaught. So speak with the victim, a lawyer, an advocacy organization, or a trusted journalist for guidance first. Next, add context. When you're uploading a video you filmed, ensure searchability by including specifics like location and date in the title and description. And finally, back it up. Never delete or edit the original file. Save copies in secure locations, in case Facebook or YouTube takes it down. If you're sharing a video you didn't film, consider downloading it. Now, here are some questions to ask yourself and some suggested answers. What's stopping you from standing up? Where there's a will, even a tiny one, there is a way, says Amanda Littman, author of Run for Something, a real talk guide to fixing the system yourself. Here she tackles what might be holding you back. I don't have anything to offer. Do you have money, time, friends, family, a Facebook profile, or a Twitter account? Then you have something to offer. I don't have enough time to do anything meaningful. That's probably not true. Tell me the amount of time you have, and I'll tell you what you can do to make a difference. 30 seconds a week. Retweet or share an online post and add your own call to action. Ask your friends to donate to a cause or volunteer, or simply ask them to watch a video and share it if they feel so moved. By showing your support for a cause, you're helping expand its reach. 10 minutes a week? Make a phone call or three for an issue you care about. Dial up your congressional representatives and let them know what's on your mind. 3 hours a week, find the candidate or topic that motivates you and show up for them. Whether you're knocking on doors for an animal rights charity or attending a local school board meeting, your presence matters. I don't know which fight is most important right now. Forget about what the news says or what Twitter is up in arms about, and consider which fight is most important to you. That might be Black Lives Matter, or immigration reform, or traffic patterns in your neighborhood, or arts funding in your school district. Activism is kind of like exercise. The best fight to take on is the one that engages you. I'm worried about what people will think. Look at it this way. Your silence is a vacuum that the other side would be more than happy to fill. Is that really preferable? I can't contribute much money. Can you spare $5 a month? No, that's okay. Your time and vocal support will make an impact. Just by discussing the issues you care about with friends and family, you'll bring more people on board. But if you can spare $5 a month, great. Even $5 will make a difference to organizations and candidates you believe in. Start a recurring credit card donation so the folks making budgets will know they can count on your support for the long haul. By giving, you'll join a community of people like you now who have a little skin in the game. You can afford $5 and more, please do, and go a step further. Get your network involved. Talk about your donations on social media. Invite friends to your home for dinner and a fundraiser. Don't feel bad asking for money. Remember, you're not requesting a personal loan. You're asking friends to invest in their own future. And finally, never forget that activism and politics combined have brought us suffrage, the civil rights movement, marriage equality, the Affordable Care Act, and hundreds of thousands of seemingly small ordinances and laws that together make up the fabric of our civil society. Some days it seems like pushing a boulder uphill. Victories will feel small and you won't see immediate progress. But over the course of generations, the little wins will add up, changing your neighborhood, your town, your state, our country, our world. You can be part of that. And we'll have to finish our feature article in the next installment. And as we wrap up this one, let's listen to some answers to this month's question. What one value you learned as a child that you still try to live by today? Sarah Fitzgerald of Lincoln, Nebraska says, always use the bathroom before a road trip, even if you don't feel like you have to go. Belinda Silber of Chicago says, you can do anything a man can do. I learned this from my grandmother as she taught me how to fix a flat tire. And Sharon Stetz of Tucson says, make time to have fun. I still remember the night my mother told us to leave the dishes in the sink in favor of playing Monopoly and having butter pecan ice cream. And Renee Walter of Phoenix says, read and you'll never be alone. We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Susan Dellinger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.